Welcome to a burning fire, Jeremiah 20 and verse 9. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. Those of us in the church often just simply take too much for granted. We assume that everyone, including our own children, know the difference between right and wrong on basic and fundamental matters, when actually they do not know, because they've not been taught correctly. We're naive to think that those in the church are immune from the influence and the propaganda of those who deny God and who bombard our society with immorality and corruption. Too many in the church have a hesitancy to oppose the moral degeneracy that abounds in our land, thinking for some unexplained reason that dealing with such matters is out of bounds for the church in its teaching. The failure of Christian people to militantly speak out and stand up for the way of right in our nation has contributed to the advance of wickedness in the nation. God does not look favorably upon such people. Christians are concerned with the salvation of souls, but are they not also to be lights in this world and the salt of the earth? We must involve ourselves, therefore, in such issues lest there be a complete erosion of civilization and morality and the concept of the dignity of the human being. Today, nearly 4,000 lives will be deliberately snuffed out. Now, this will not occur in Russia or China or Cuba or Iraq or something like that, or other God-denying and tyrannical nations. This will occur in the United States. Those whose lives shall be terminated, they are not victims of war, nor are they criminals receiving just punishment for their crimes, but they are simply innocent babies. Abortion is being used to end unwanted pregnancies of unwed mothers by the thousands. But not only this, as we shall discuss. Abortion has become a major madness of murder in the land of the freaks and the home of the knaves. The Supreme Court has ruled the legality of abortions. Our government continues to advance the practice of abortion. Christians know that the Bible teaches that everything that is legal is not necessarily moral. A woman is permitted to abort her child during the first 3 months of pregnancy simply on the decision of herself and her so-called doctor. During the second 3 months, she is allowed to abort her child if it is deemed needful to protect her life. And even during the final 3 months, even when the child is often capable of living and surviving outside the mother's womb, she is allowed to abort her child if it is thought necessary for the woman's mental, physical, and emotional health. And how subjective that is. This is so broad and can cover so much that simply no protection for the child whatsoever. But actually is just simply abortion on demand. The present government of the United States is ruled by the most degenerate band of servants of hell to occupy the land in our time. And I'm speaking in the era of the 1990s. And they advocate abortion on demand at any time for any reason. They would even demand everybody pay for it. How can a nation survive under such godless fools? In most major cities of the nation, there are even advertisements in newspapers and on billboards advising women where they can go and have their babies destroyed. Friend, this is the low level of barbarism to which this nation has stooped in this matter. Doctors who have taken oaths to preserve life have betrayed their oaths and their calling and have devoted their entire money-making careers and practices to the destruction of life rather than its preservation. The abortion clinics are gleaning millions upon millions of dollars, killing babies. Now, it will not be our purpose to be descriptive of the inhumane scenes of horror and butchery and savagery and terror involved in the abortion process. Now, those things need to be known, and those of age should even see pictures of such to impress on their minds what a horrible matter we have under consideration. But But our lesson is concerned with God's attitude toward this matter of abortion. While the proponents of abortion object being compared with the perpetrators of the Nazi atrocities against humanity, they are incapable of presenting a case in their defense as to why they should not be so considered, and even worse than the Nazi murderers who killed 5 to 6 million Jews over a period of years. But abortion kills from 40 to 45 million babies every year throughout the world, and America leads the way. What the Nazis did is minor compared to what abortionists are doing all the time. Now, to center our thought, let us ask and pointedly answer some relevant and pertinent questions. Is that which is in the womb alive? Well, obviously, the answer is yes. Well, when did that which is in the womb become alive? It was when the female egg and the male sperm united. If it was not alive, friend, it would not grow, but it grows. Is that which is in the mother's womb merely a part of the mother's body? Absolutely not. We hear advocates of abortion plead for the mother's right of power over her own body. We hear them cry for choice. But the mother exercised power over her body when she engaged in sexual intercourse. Now that the child is conceived, more is involved than just her body. Everything a person will become is included already in that which is in the mother's womb. Here is a new body. And even though this new body is dependent upon the mother's body, it is a totally new life. It is not, as abortionists say, like a tumor, or an appendix, or the tonsils, or some diseased tissue that can be removed upon choice. Once conception has occurred, not only must the mother consider her body, but there must be consideration of the baby. Well, again, is that which is in the mother's womb human? Why, certainly it is. It is produced by humans. It's not animal or vegetable. The indifference toward abortion is some of the fruit of the theory of evolution that considers the human being being nothing but a highly evolved animal. This is the reason we affirm that evolutionists are enemies to the dignity of humanity. Taking that theory to its logical conclusion, the disposal of any human being cannot be considered anything more than the disposal of any other animal. Well, is the human life in the mother's womb innocent human life? Why, certainly it is. The child certainly is sinless, having done no evil, no guilt of sin whatever. Well, does abortion willfully, deliberately, intentionally, with premeditation and forethought, destroy the innocent and human life? Well, the answer is yes. And, friend, this is precisely the definition of murder. This drives right to the heart of the matter. Abortion is murder. Legalized abortion is legalized murder. Proverbs 6 and verse 17, among other things, lists that God hates hands that shed innocent blood. Now this makes a difference to civilized and moral people. God therefore hates abortion and hates that which abortionists do. Well, what does the Bible teach on this subject? That murder is prohibited is unquestioned by anyone who knows anything about the Bible. Murder by abortion, like other means of murder, are not necessarily mentioned specifically and explicitly. But the conclusion can be confidently drawn with unwavering certainty from the principles of truth as well as specific statements that relate to this matter. Let us turn our attention to some of these. In Acts 17 and verse 25, Paul said of God, He giveth life to all. God gives life. Does man, with impunity and without God's authority, have the right to terminate human life? Human life is different from all other forms of life because mankind is created in the spiritual image of God, Genesis 1, 26 and 27. For this reason, human life is sacred. We are different from animals. This is the basis for human rights and human dignity. Without this special characteristic, we're nothing more than materialistic beasts. To impress on man the special distinction he has and the sacredness of human life, God decreed the forfeiture of one's own life if he lacked respect for the sacredness of human life and murdered another, Genesis 9 and verse 6. Abortion is compatible with evolution, and humanism, and atheism, and other anti-human and anti-God philosophies. The dignity of the human being rests solely on biblical teaching that man is in the spiritual image of God. Again, the Bible does not distinguish between the unborn and the newborn babe, as far as the babe being a human being. In Jeremiah 1 and verse 5, "Before I formed thee in the belly, I knew thee. Before thou camest forth out of the womb, I sanctified thee, and ordained thee a prophet unto the nations." Friend, may I ask, did God sanctify just a blob of tissue or ordain a tumor? None can doubt that God considered Jeremiah a person, even before Jeremiah was born. The unborn John the Baptist leaped in his mother's womb when his mother, Elizabeth, and the expectant mother of Jesus met each other. There is no question but John was considered a living person even before birth. We must ask with caution of bordering on irreverence, was that which was in the womb of Mary only a blob of tissue, as abortionists contend? No God-fearing person would ever consent to such blasphemy. The Scripture uses the word brephos to refer to both an unborn as well as a newborn child. In Luke 1, 41, and also verse 44, it is used to refer to John before his birth. It is used of Jesus after his birth, Luke 2 and verse 12. It was used of newborn infants in Acts 7 and verse 19. There is no distinction because one is already a person, a distinct human being, both before and after birth, all the degenerate raving to the contrary notwithstanding. More often than not, abortion is used to terminate pregnancy that has resulted from fornication and adultery. Unmarried couples engage in sexual intercourse without regard to morality, with no regard to the power of reproduction, with no concern for the child that might be conceived, with no regard to the spiritual welfare of anybody, and with contempt for the ways of God, with no respect for the sacredness of marriage, and when a child is conceived, in order to cover their sin and to shed responsibility, to dispose of what they do not want, they resort to the murder of the child. Friend, that's just the way it is. Like David, but in a different way, they resort to murder in their attempt to cover the result of their sin. Those who obey, "Thou shalt not commit adultery," never have to consider abortion to cover their wickedness. Some married and professional women are having abortions because they're more concerned with their careers, their personal ambitions, their selfish goals, than they are the God-given role of motherhood and the responsibility of parenthood. Being encouraged by degenerate feminists, which is a redundancy because all feminists are degenerate, whose goals are opposed to the ways of God, they resort to murdering their child rather than bearing the child. God condemns those who are without natural affection, Romans 1 and verse 31, which refers to those lacking affection even regarding their own children. This is certainly descriptive of those who endorse and practice abortion. It is a characteristic of a depraved society. It is ironic that some who endorse abortion even try to go to the Bible, which they despise, in order to justify it. Of course, abortionists have no use for the God's Word. They don't believe the Bible. They ridicule the Bible. But they think that if they could use the Bible to advance their heathenism, why, they would do it. They contend that Adam was not alive until God breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. Therefore, the baby is not alive until it breathes. In the womb, it does not breathe. Well, while it is true that the system whereby the baby gets oxygen is changed at birth, his difference with Adam is that Adam was created mature. Adam was not alive in any sense until God breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. But that is not true concerning the conceived child. He is alive from the moment of conception. If that were not true, the babe would not and could not grow. Some cite Exodus 21 to make a distinction between the life of an unborn child and another human life. But that passage actually is evidence contrary to the arguments of the abortionists. Listen to what the passage says, friend. If men strive and hurt a woman with child, so that her fruit depart from her, and yet no mischief follow, he shall be surely punished, according as the woman's husband will lay upon him, and he shall pay as the judges determine. And if any mischief follow, then thou shalt give life for life. Now the scene is that of a struggle between two men in which a woman with child is hurt, causing the child to depart from the mother's womb. Abortionists claim, if the baby dies, only a fine is to be paid, but if the mother dies, the punishment is death. Therefore, they say, the child is not considered a living person like the mother. The fallacy of this argument is evident because abortionists read into the passage, not out of the passage. The passage does not say if the baby dies as a result of the struggle, merely a fine is to be paid. A fine is to be paid because the fruit of the womb is departed prematurely. The baby may live, and no mischief other than a premature birth occurs. Even this is to be fined, according to the law. But if any mischief follow the incident, which would certainly be true in the event of either the death of the mother or the child, then capital punishment was to be exacted. Is the death of the child no mischief? This proves that both mother and child are living persons. Furthermore, the case under consideration in Exodus is not even parallel to the deliberate, planned, premeditated destruction of innocent human life. This case was an accidental matter, not a willful destruction of the child. This passage offers no support whatever for abortion. There are some very hard questions related to this matter, to be sure. This is a great emotional issue, and often emotions overrule truth in the minds of some. And some ask, can the child be aborted to save the mother's life, or if the mother's life is threatened? Friend, the mother's life is always threatened in every birth. Dr. Jerome Lejeune, famous geneticist, answered the question, I would never attack and kill the unborn child. He further explained that if he was faced with either or situation, either the child or the mother, such as a cancerous uterus or a tubal pregnancy, he would be forced to remove the cancer or tumor, and in doing so would inadvertently cause the child to die. But the death of the child would not be the cause of the surgery, nor its purpose. The purpose would be to save life, not destroy it. The motive involved is of paramount concern. Dr. Lee Casey of Nashville, Tennessee, who delivered so many children over his many years of medical practice, and who was attended at the birth of my firstborn, is reported to have said, In all my years of practice, I have never seen the case where such a choice was even necessary. Now, this does not mean that such a choice is never necessary, but it is extremely rare. And when the choice must be made, it is a choice to save life. It is not a choice to deliberately destroy life, like abortion. Surely such rare instances to save life ought not be the basis for the wholesale and indiscriminate murder of millions of babies each year. But one asks, what if pregnancy results from rape or from incest? Now, friend, we're not insensitive to the victims of such atrocious crimes, nor the emotional complications in such instances. Our hearts bleed for those who have been so mistreated. We're repulsed at the sympathy for the criminal while victims are often forgotten and neglected. If I had my way, there would never be the possibility of one convicted of rape or incest ever being able to commit that crime again, regardless of what it would take. But even if such circumstances occur, where pregnancy might occur under these conditions, this is no basis for allowing wholesale killing of babies such as now being done. Even under these circumstances, the dignity of the human life is the overriding issue. We have read a report of a 10-year study in Minneapolis involving 3,500 rape cases, and not one time did pregnancy result. We are told that the female reproductive system rarely conceives under the trauma of rape. And even there is a rape. It takes several hours for the sperm to reach the ovum, and emergency treatment by medication can prevent conception. Certainly we are dealing with a human tragedy all around in these instances. But are we to set standards according to the rare exceptions? We're told that abortion is a method of population and birth control. Well, it certainly is, though some deny that they use it for that purpose. There is a similar method also, such as killing off everybody over 60 years of age, or killing off those of deformity, or whatever might not be wanted. Why would not that control population? And as frightening as it is, there are those, like one who was a governor of Colorado, who did advocate that elderly people should consent to die for the benefit of those who are younger. What if there is a danger of physical or mental deformity of the unborn child? Again, friend, this is always a possibility in every birth. But do we destroy children who are born with abnormalities and deformities? Would you discontinue the programs of assistance to such people and just simply kill them? Is not a deformed child a human being? And who is to decide which deformities warrant being murdered and which should be allowed to live? Shall we let the evolutionist and the humanist and the atheist and the Hitlers of the world make such judgments? Who do we decide to keep? Who do we decide to destroy? Possibly the world would have profited if those who now advocate abortion had been victims of what they advocate. The fact remains that there is no justification for the murder of unborn children, and this is precisely what abortion is. Abortions because of rape or deformity constitute but a very small percentage of the abortions being performed anyway. But even these are wrong. Living in a world where this degenerate barbarism exists and grows, what can the Christian do? He must first realize the enormity of this sin and its consequences. He must reaffirm his concept of the sacredness of human life and the dignity thereof. Once society opens its doors to this kind of savagery, there is no limit to the low level of conduct to which the human family will descend. The doors are already open in these United States where God is attempted to be mocked. Already some advocate infanticide and euthanasia and genocide, the destruction of unwanted races. The only positive thing that can be said for abortion, and this benefit has already passed, is how much better the world would have been if the parents of the proponents of abortion had practiced it. Christians must remember the basis of human dignity and how mankind is created in the spiritual image of God. We must emphasize before the world, actively, militantly, aggressively, before it is beyond the point of return, the Christian standards of morality, the individual responsibility for one's actions, the sanctity of the home and marriage. We must steadfastly resist the moral degenerates, the feminists, the politicians, the parasites on society, whose profane mouths must be stopped before they uproot every semblance of human dignity to accommodate their vile ways. More often than not, these opponents of everything good are led by homosexuals, lesbians, prostitutes, money-hungry doctors, fornicators, adulterers, disgruntled females who are unhappy with their role in life and who are miserable and who want everybody else to accommodate their sinfulness and share their misery by determining the pattern for all society. Dear friend, our opponents and enemies are anti-God, anti-Christ, anti-society, anti-Bible, anti-church, anti-marriage, anti-morality, dominated by whores and whoremongers, whose lives overrun with all forms of moral filth and vile pollution. We need to know our enemy and the nature of these vicious opponents of God and of truth, these people who have become so corrupt that they seek to dignify every vice and denounce every virtue, legalize every perversion, and ridicule God's plan for mankind. There will be found promoting the Equal Rights Amendment. They are members of this National Organization of Women. They'll vote for those who advocate sin. They will court the favor of such movements to reach office. They advocate the extraction of tax funds to provide for the murder of children for all who want it, who prostitute the ideals of womanhood and motherhood, because their minds are so filled with the evil of Satan they cannot and will not see. Dear friend, we are naive to think we are against a people who listen to reason or who are persuaded by truth. This they hold in contempt. We are against the most venomous and cruel tyrants with evil minds our world can consider. And while our hearts grieve because of their mental and physical and spiritual condition, we cannot be so blind as to allow them to force their wickedness down the throats of us all and for the forthcoming generations. We live in a time of a sinful world, and the nation grows worse and worse and worse each day because of abortion. And we have to ask, it's fair to ask, God bless America. If we permit such things, why should he? This has been A Burning Fire. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. Until next time.